Mr. Day, Reel 6. We were talking about your 3 days in the casualty clearing station at Mercer, Matru, during December 1940. And I wondered, was there anything else you were doing that you can recall during the time? Any other duties you had or that you were covering for other people?
No. I remember digging a big refuge trench for ablution trench.
A latrine trench?
Right, yes. Soaked it. No, nothing else.
Now, one thing you mentioned, which I'd like to touch on, is you mentioned that the bandages and things that were taken off were all burnt. Were you very aware of the dangers of medical refuse, as it, you know?
Yeah, because I mean, a lot of men, as I say, were suffering from like gas gangrene and medical equipment, medical bandages, and you know, must be burnt immediately with heat and flies and so forth. And they're telling what secondary things.
Did you actually have an incinerator?
Yes.
And that was at the CCS. Would you have your own? Sorry to just tag this on. Would the South Notts as ours have one?
We'd have a pit and a couple of bars, and we'd burn everything and then bury it with sand. Yes.
But that wasn't a proper incinerator.
No.
But this one at the casualty clearing.
Yes, it's probably an army regulations incinerator. I don't remember or recall myself burning anything. There were other men sort of attached to it who did these things. And
now, at the end, you said you were so tired you hardly knew what you were doing. I mean, what symptoms does fatigue like that show? You got no sleep at all then?
No sleep for 3 days and three nights. Not far as, you know, influx of wounded men came in first, as I say, the British and the Italians.
And how did you said you didn't quite know what you were doing? That's one symptom, you know, a bit of confusion. Were you able to keep your? I mean, were you able to keep your eyes open, or?
Oh yes. Well, it took you. I mean, little things like taking a bandage or putting a bandage on, sticking a thermometer in a man's mouth, in which you do slightly abnormally quickly. But you had to think about things. Your brain was working sluggishly. It was tired. And you need to have to reflect upon what you were doing.
So everything took longer.
Right.
You were less efficient.
That's right.
Could you have carried on any longer?
No, don't think you could. You get to a limit of everything you do, and you get to a limit of your own bodily capacity.
And that was yours. Was that coincidentally at the end of the period you had to do, or was that when you had to stop and they carried on?
No, there was, as far as I remember, there were very few Italian wounded left. And Geddes had been replaced by another surgeon, who I cannot remember his name, and I was sent back to the unit, out to the South Officers' House, to RAP, to Finnegan, to Dr. Finnegan.
Had any of the, I mean, the South Officers' House had been out, had there been any wounded during the...
I never had to deal with it. I can't recall having had to deal with it. They were most on the, with Gary Burke, he was the, he was now captured the Italian flag, and... 600 guns, I think, but no, I never took in that particular operation. I was back at this base,
now that were there any special celebrations at Christmas?
I spent Christmas near Derna. I remember, I think somebody bartered a sheep with some Arabs, bartered something for a sheep, and we had it. Well, I remember mutton or whatever for Christmas. That was near Derna. We moved up a little from the Muslim tree. Yeah.
Were you involved at all in the collecting of Italian vehicles and?
No, not at all. I don't remember.
Now, in January, they pulled back to the Delta, and they were on this job of mine spotting in the Suez
That's
Canal.
That's right. The German bombers were dropping magnetic mines in the Suez Canal to disrupt canal traffic, and we, in turn, were having, we had magnets huge man that's been fitted to Lenin's, and they were pulling them off, and it was our job. We had various stations down the Suez Canal, machine gunning and blowing them up. We had some casualties by mines that hadn't been blown up and being run over by small boats, not big ones, but small boats.
What were you doing during this? Because you wouldn't be one of these posts, would you?
No, I was at the canal station, and we visited the post to see if it was all right, and we were sick or anything.
Would that be a tour in your truck?
That's right, with the doctor and the driver. We had a swimming race in 1902, of which it was reported in the history.
Swimming race in the canal, you mean?
At the canal, yes. Right.
What do you remember of that?
It was an inter-battery thing. I swam to the regimental headquarters. There was the other two batteries, 45 and 46 battery. We had a team of, it was a relay, and a team of four. It states categorically in the South Monsters that I won the race. I didn't. Regimental headquarters won it. I remember I went off first, and I made quite a good start. The last man to came was Vic Jones, who went down on his back, much to my dismay, because he was being caught up. I think every man got, of the four of us that took part in it, £5 from the regimental funds, which we went into Suez at night and blew. I think it was in the Kit Kat Club or something.
What was a Kit Kat Club like?
It had got a stage, more like a boxing ring, where, soldiers, airmen, sailors on me, they used to dance with these local cabaret girls, bimps, and ladies.
Was there much drinking?
Yes. And occasionally, quite a lot of, well, I say not a lot, but there was occasionally outrages between the RAF and the Navy, because the Navy has quite much, in the last stages, not particularly Mers and the stages, but by the way, Germany came into the desert, lots of stages, they lost quite a few battleships, aircraft carriers with the Stukas, and the Navy thought they hadn't had adequate support by the RAF. Of course, this was nothing to do with the personnel, it was due to the higher-ups, wasn't it? Yeah.
So there'd be trouble?
Yes, but only again, sort of locally, a couple of boats, sort of, that they made something on a ship and saw an Air Force broken room, and they sort of had a few drinks. I thought, oh, well, he's probably been not doing his duty right, and take a swing at him. And it was mostly the Jippo Bent who stopped in the middle and stopped the packet, That's an awesome story. The bottle flew, so he died under the table out the road.
Would that be your main thing to keep out the road?
My main thing, I remember picking two or three girls up who had stopped a bottle or two. My medical sense of sort of restoring the wounded, I went to see what I could do for her, took her out to the changing room, and did my best to bring her to her, took her to the madam. Yeah, I remember one particular. And then Kit Kat Club stopping the packet, stepped between a sailor and an airman, and stopped the lot. A full blooded straight right, which hit a smack on the jaw. Not just for six.
So, anything else about that period on the canal?
There was a disease called bilharzia. We call it bilharis. It was in the Sweetwater Canal. It was due to petrification or whatever. And we used to travel across the Sweetwater Canal in sort of a platform which we pulled each other across. And I remember going out on a binge somewhere, and probably Suez, and coming back via the Sweetwater Canal, and two young men, Cook and Law, who were inseparables, fell in. And of course, they swore that we weren't to have the bones all sort of eaten away by this horrible disease, and we were not going to live anymore, which of course never happened. They quite lived to, as far as I know, they're still alive now, I hope so. Anyway. And I remember a German bomber coming. German bomber coming over one night and sort of dropping the mine in the canal. It dropped on the bank, which caused a great explosion. But other than that, it's okay.
Now, the regiment was then put on for an assault of roads, it was going
to
be.
That's right.
I mean, would that sort of thing affect you much, or would you know much about it?
I heard about it, yes. I think the general opinion of the higher-ups was that Turkey was going to be coming to the war. on the Axis side, and there was going to be some assault on war, but that is not for me to say. That's what I heard over the grapevine.
But the actual assault training, did you have to partake in any of it?
I didn't. Any extra training. Assault, and of course, we.
Now, after that, I think the next thing really is in April when you had to do that enormous journey as quick as possible up to Tobruk.
Yeah.
What was that journey like to actually be in?
Well, I went up on the trucks. I remember George Hooker was sitting opposite me and the stretcher got caught up with a passing Australian vehicle which swung round smartly and hit him in the mouth, knocking a lot of teeth out and doing quite some damage. Apart from that, it was sort of close order as fast as you could get to Tobruk, which of course then was surrounded.
I mean, a journey that length, I mean, it must have been very uncomfortable.
Yeah, you bounced about a bit, yeah. Well, I don't remember anything, you know. It probably was worse. It would be worse for the gunners. The thing in these bigger trunks are 3 tonners. They pulled in a lot of sand in the back. The vacuum, the truck going, pulled in a lot of sand, and that was much more.
What do you remember about the arrival at Tobruk? You got there, and the situation.
I got there. I remember the colonel walking around with a rifle on his back, and we did the best we could to set up an aid post as quickly as we could.
Where was the first one you set up?
It was just under the escarpment. It would be, I would think, some probably 4 miles from the guns. We had to be sort of within nice and easy distance between the two batteries, between 425 and 426, and the gun teams. And it was put up just under the escarpment. It was dug in.
What did it look like? I mean,
it was much the same as mature, not so big. Just like an ordinary, this sort of size sitting room, say 12 foot cubed.
And that had all been dug out?
Been dug out, corrugated sides.
But not by you?
Oh no, we had a teapot here, a group of
guys. It wasn't an old Italian one this time?
No, this was quite. There were old Italian. They had most of them in beers, which used caves, you know, the Italian before the Italian used beers, caves. The things of war, cartridge belts, old rifles, and various other equipment, rifle Italian equipment.
Now, so you were about 4 miles from the guns?
Yes.
But both sort of in between. And towards Tobruk from the guns?
Right. Yes, the perimeter, I think I'm right in saying the perimeter was about 30 miles. Not being certain. Of course, it was not only the South Knots, there were other artillery regiments. Of course, it's Australian infantry. I think it was the 9th Australian Division, the commander who, which was... Lieutenant General Moshead.
So you set up this thing. Now, that's a long way, 4 miles. I mean, so from the unit to have the sort of day-to-day contact you'd had previously. So how did the system work then, the whole medical system?
We didn't have a day-to-day contact with them. If they had an air raid or any casualties from bombs, air raids, Stukas, or by shelling, they were brought to the RAP.
And who would do that?
Anybody, I fancy, in the actual unit, in the gun team where they were.
So was there any immediate medical assistance on hand at the batteries? Was there anyone responsible in each battery for actually patching someone up before they were sent back?
There was a regimental orderly to each battery, as far as I recall.
A medical orderly?
A medical, yeah. Have been given some training. We'll see at the end of the sent down to
it. He'd be less skilled than you would, though, or would he be about the same?
About the same. I might have known a bit more, because because being working with a doctor more, you learn more. If you're working with a doctor, you get more responsibility and you use drugs more.
So what would the man do, the orderly do at the battery?
He would just have first aid. He'd administer first aid, then he'd whip them down to the aid.
So first aid being mainly bandages?
Right. Or across, in case of a fracture, a splint.
What about the... was there anything of him, say, giving painkiller, morphine?
No, we would not have that available. That would be at the RA.
So there was no chance of him prescribing anything or giving a tetanus jab? That was all out?
The doctor would do that, or me under the doctor's instructions. Of course, there was a military hospital staffed by British nurses.
How far away were you from that?
From the military hospital? Oh, goodness me, how far would it be? 5 miles, I suppose.
So again, a fair way. And that would actually be in Tobruk?
That was in Tobruk, yeah.
So when they came in, just run through first what the procedure was with the actual SAF, not SARS. The wounded would arrive, and would it be a sort of miniature version of the casualty clearance station?
Right. Miniature version of the casualty clearance station at Merton. They'd be treated by the doctor, given anti-tetanus serum, morphine where it was necessary, splinting, dressing, asepsis would be attained, antiseptic, and rest wounds, and they would be down to the hospital.
How long would a typical wounded person, bad arms, how long would they be in your care then?
Fractured arm, fractured, say, humerus, or from pains, upon it was compound or whatever, and no more than possibly half an hour. But our job was to get them to the hospital.
So if a man had been splinted, would he necessarily, and you could, the doctor could see that it was that the orderly had done it reasonably well, would it just be left on or would it always be changed?
It would be changed, mostly. Make sure that it was right. It was looked at properly and tension, and then it could be reversed.
But still with a temporary splint, we're talking. Still with a wire splint.
That's right.
But there was no... Everybody was looked at. No.
Right.
Now, just one point that comes to mind is after the, you know, the problem Major Bat had, were you often a wound would be obvious, but were people... Was it difficult to sometimes look for secondary or not-so-obvious wounds, especially when the man was unconscious or...
This would be taken care of at the base and at the casualty clearing station. It could be missed in very exceptional cases, but they'd have to be very exceptional cases. I mean, if a man had his foot hanging off, your person's main concern would be to that knee. You wouldn't look for a tiny fraction of shrapnel having entered some other part of his body and ultimately causing gangrene.
Oh, I don't mean just that. I mean with other cases. I think you made it clear, though, that normally, A, it would be obvious if someone was secondarily wounded, but B, it wasn't your job to find it. You wouldn't actually search the body for another wound if it wasn't...
Because the more serious wound would be dealt with first, because afterwards there might be another man waiting with just a serious wound, and the first man, this is in case of real urgent battle casualty, wouldn't have enough time to go through the whole entire body to look for subsidiary wounds when the other man was waiting with his leg hanging off or his arm hanging off. They got to be, he got to be there for once a month. It's about the most serious wound would best be looked after first. Then the main job, of course, is getting down to hospitalisation.
Now, I believe that we've just had a gap, which is not apparent on the tape, but you've just told me that this ambulance system wasn't in operation at Tobruk.
No, we only had one or two men killed, quite a few at Lenchet, but at the initial stages there were two men killed, and then we had a man brought to the RAP, in Gingerbark, a sergeant, Gingerbark, and he was sent ultimately. I think he was taken by truck. I think he had a fractured humerus or a fractured arm. He was taken to the Brook, and he went on a hospital boat to the Delta, and I think he sustained, I think it was sunk, or somewhere they didn't get down to the Delta.
So
I don't recall a lot of batches of ambulances coming up from the
So that, so where were those ambulances you were talking about? Where was that at? Right, that's all right. So when you did get the wounded, it was up to your unit to provide the transport to get them back to the Tobruk hospital.
Yes.
That must have been uncomfortable, because I mean they weren't.
As I say, the men who, as I remember, the men who had any treatment at all, Smedley was killed and Collyhall was killed. And this Doctor Sergeant was taken down to the base hospital.
So you didn't get many wounded in?
No. During the siege, which lasted the best part of 11 months, we had a lot of wounded. They were taken by truck, as far as I know. We attended two gun pits. One had a primitive burst in the gun pit and fired expensive rounds. And I remember going and attending to these men. And then another batch of casualties were reported in some other part, and we had to go over there.
So, if there was a single casualty, they'd be brought to the regimental aid post.
Yes.
And then transport arranged to go back. There was no hospital ambulance system at that.
I never recall an ambulance going at all.
But if there was a batch of casualties, you and Finnegan, and or whoever,
yes,
whoever was with you, would go to where the scene of the
accident. Right.
So if there's more than one or two.
Yes.
Now, just to finish this section, your daily routine then would be fairly well the same as it had been at Tobruk.
Right, that's what we're saying.
Sorry, Mercer, I'm doing it now, yes. And what about less serious casualties? I mean, not casualties, people just come up going sick. What would they... Would they come back to you, or would you go up to them? Where would you hold your sick parade?
At the RAP. We wouldn't move from there. We never moved from there. We never moved up to the gun position at all.
Except in an emergency.
Except an emergency.
So they'd come back. Would they come down in the morning by truck if they felt sick or sand sores?
Yeah. And
treat
them if they were not, if it was possible for them to go back and resume the normal duties, they'd go back and resume the normal duties. If it wasn't, then we'd have to send them down to into hospital.
You wouldn't retain them. You didn't have a couple of beds.
Oh, no, we couldn't. No.
So you couldn't keep anyone.
We couldn't possibly do that. There's no way we could do that. We were sort of dive bombed every night. They used to dive bomb the harbour and come round the machine.
So basically, you either sent them back to the unit or they went to hospital.
Yes.
There was no sort of halfway house.
No.
Going back to the start, then you arrived and how did the events of the battle, and you know, of the siege affect you? What are the major things you remember about the siege from the start, really?
Well, the guns, the 25 pounders and the troops, they were repelling German panzers, which was the first time they had been stopped during the duration of the war up to that time. First time they'd been marked.
Now, you wouldn't see anything of that, but would you know what was happening?
Yes, we heard the orders shouted to the guns and the different lengths, how many yards they had to fire, receding as the German tanks approached, and then going forward as the German tanks receded, you see, going
back. So how would you hear it if you were a few miles away? Was there a tannoy or something?
I believe there was a tannoy. We heard it in the early stages of the battle. As the German tanks advanced, the range grew less, and as the German tanks retreated, the range grew greater.
And your RAP was always in the same place?
In the same place.
You never actually moved after that early bit?
No.
And what about the rest of the siege? Any other major events that you remember?
I remember the troopers coming over every night and out there.
What was it like to be? I mean, did they ever direct themselves at you, your area, or was it just a general of the Tobruk area?
It was generally at the harbour first, and then they would come back and machine gun the guns and wherever. And I remember there was an Australian, I think he was an Australian, with a Beaufort, and he was absolutely deadly. He knocked quite a few troopers out. And one night, he came over, as they were used to do in the summer setting. And those, and instead of bombing the harbour, they bombed this chap with the Beauforts. And fortunately, he moved. He still took a heavy toll on them. They did come over one night and bomb near the RAC.
What was it like to be under a Stuka attack? It's difficult to imagine these days.
Well, they used to come down from the silence on, you know, the Banshee silence. It was not very pleasant.
Did the sirens work? I mean, they were meant to frighten.
They were meant, that's what they put there for.
Did they succeed? I mean, was it more frightening than...
Yeah, but one got used to it, you know, you got used to it, and most people didn't get much, you know, much bother about it. It was just another thing, and the thing was to try and be in a slip trench when they came over.
Was it more or less frightening than the high-level bombing had been?
It was more accurate. Of course, the Stukas were more accurate. It was like an aerial artillery fire. Directed they aimed the plane at the specific target, and the bomb fell out as the bomb they had carried to.
Did you ever actually get... Were you ever actually the target? You weren't actually...
They came over one night and bombed all round us within probably 10, 20 yards, or maybe more, but quite near. But normally, no. The harbour was their main target.
And what was that like when they actually concentrated on you? How did you feel?
Pretty rotten, yeah. It was quite frightening, yeah. You got this shit, but it was quite frightening. We had a fair amount of immersion free, but it was different.
So that's that one aspect of Tobruk. What else do you remember from all those months you were there? Were you aware of how the battle was going?
Yes, I realised it was going all right. Of course, this was called the Operation Crusader, and it was a long drawn out affair. There was a big tank battle at Sidi Rezegh that we passed when the word came out of Tobruk, which was pretty dreadful. We had a brief leave at Blackham Bay.
What was that like?
Very nice. Stukas never visited Blackham Bay, at least I never remember. We had good swimming there. And it was quite nice to spend a few days, sort of half a day, away from the activities of the Stukas.
It was just like seaside with...
Just a part of the African coast, just a part of the Tobruk, you know, the African coast that wasn't... it wasn't in the war, you know, it's nice rest camp.
Would you actually have tents and things? Where were you accommodated while you were there?
Dugouts, trenches or whatever. The ones I remember had done the artillery position. They've done the soldiers put up. This was the benefit of the soldiers to draw their fire. I remember passing those, and we used to have swimming parades to Blackham Bay as opposed to staying there. And I remember several times shouting to them, I never got any reply.